All right, so now everybody's nervous. It's the afterburn, and nobody wants the mic. All right, so this is what we call the afterburn. If you have comments or questions on the teaching, look, you know what? Gentleness and enabling and coddling has gotten you this far. It's not going to get you out of the mess you're in. Okay? It's just not. Okay? You need a fire lit under you. You know? I was watching yesterday. I may actually play this for the children. Okay? As far as their life prep classes, Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing, I think, a commencement speech at like a graduation or something. And in the speech, he said, there's no magic. There's only hard work. You have to work your you-know-what off. And he used the word I wouldn't use here, but, you know, you have to work it off. He said, I worked out, look, when he was bodybuilding and trying to become, at 20 years old, the first and youngest Mr. Universe, he worked out 5 hours a day and worked a job because working out doesn't pay, and went to school and studied acting at night. How much are you actually doing with your day? He said, I didn't waste a minute. And with that, he became the youngest Mr. Universe, and he ended up in film and becoming one of the biggest, you know, film, you know, box office draws, et cetera, because he worked hard. And that's the thing that the children need to learn, but also as us adults, you know, every millionaire, every successful person, every superstar in anything, they all say the same thing. If you want what I have, it's simple. You have to be willing to do what I did. You know, the Olympics is going to come around again. And when it does, listen to some of the life stories of these people. I know pagan this and that. Forget about all that part. I'm talking about understanding that people make a life commitment. They give every minute of their what they eat, what they do, how they exercise, how they sleep, all with a goal. Well, you have a goal too to get in the kingdom. Oh, no, I'm saved. I don't need to have a goal for that. All right, well, go better listen to that teaching and are you saved? You need to be so doing. And you need to be motivated to be so doing. And you have to want it as bad as the gazelle running away from the cheetah. You got to want it that bad. You know, there's a story this is with the old stories of the rabbis, where a student wanted the rabbi to teach him something, whatever it was. I don't know what it was. It could have been Kabbalah, it could have been Talmud. It doesn't matter. He wanted the rabbi to teach him something. And the rabbi wasn't going to teach him. And he finally says, but I really want to learn. He says, you really want to learn? He says, fine, come out with me. And they go out into the water. They were by the ocean. They went out in the water. And he says, okay, you ready? He says, yeah. He grabbed the guy by the head and dunked him under and held him under and wouldn't let him up. And the guy's under is like at first thinking, okay, there's a lesson in this. And finally he's realizing, I'm under a long time and I can't breathe. And he starts flailing around. And then eventually he finally gets, you know, breaks free and comes up. He's like, what was that all about? Rabbi says, when you want to learn what you just said you want to learn, as bad as you just wanted to live, you'll learn. How bad do you want it? Oh, because you guys talk, oh, yeah, I want that. Yeah, but do you do anything? What are you doing? How hard are you working at it? What are you willing to give up? Are you giving up the games you play and the shows you watch and the you know, whatever? What are you giving up? See, that's the whole part. Nobody wants to give up anything. Okay, and then you listen to these guys like Schwarzenegger talk about, hey, listen, I came to this country, he said, I didn't have furniture, I didn't have plates, I didn't have utensils, I had nothing. Guys at the gym gave me stuff. He said, I didn't have a bed, I just went to the gym, worked out, went to school, I did everything I could, but I had a goal. His goal was to be Mr. Universe. That's all he could think about. Well, what's your goal? Get in the kingdom. Please your heavenly Father. Hear the words, well done, good and trustworthy servant. Do you want it that bad that you're actually focused on every aspect of your day? He even picked on sleeping. He says, you know, you got 6 hours of sleep. And then people looked at him. He says, well, I know some of you need 8. He says, so sleep faster. You need those extra 2 hours to do work. But we just don't, you know, we just put in our time as best we can and try to do the minimum. We have a minimalist mindset. It's not going to work. It's not going to get you there. You know, praise Yah, Yeshua didn't have that problem. Okay? We don't see him having any problem doing the work. If my Father works, I work. That's it. He gives us 6 days to work. He doesn't command us, you have to work 6 days, but you got 6 days. You know? I was here Friday. A lot of people were off. I was here Sunday. A lot of people were off. You know, as I mean, last week, you know, every day that I'll be here tomorrow at some point. Do some work. I mean, you have to work. There's stuff to do. As long as you got breath, there's stuff to do. Now, don't neglect the family. Make that part of the things you do. Spend time with your family. And but you schedule that in. You make sure they're getting the attention they need, and you got to do what you got to do. All right. Who wants to go first? Okay, Steve.
All right. I would like to jump on the prayer thing when you talked about the Thanksgiving. I didn't say anything, but it was great. I was grateful to have a place to come because I don't have anybody else. The only thing missing, and I don't know that we could do it, was that after dinner nap was calling me so bad. I had to cut out, and then, of course, when I woke up, it was past dark. So
yeah, the after dinner nap. Okay. I wish I'd taken one during the Cowboy game. It was terrible. So.
I'm glad you said something.
I think that the Cowboys took an after-dinner nap. That was the problem.
And then I did have a comment on your teaching in Matthew 6, I believe it's 6:21. To me, it's the danger we have is we twist our pleasures of our hearts and attempt to line it up to the pleasures or what he actually expects us to do. So we need to watch out for that because we will box our desire and put it over what he's actually expecting of us and say, see, Abba wanted us to do that when in actually we've done a lot of twisting to make it look that way.
Amen. Okay, so I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I'm going to repackage that. Okay, so when you are looking at anything, are you trying to say, okay, he wants me to do this, how do I do it? Instead, what we tend to do, which I think Steve's saying is, I want to do this, so let me look at what he says and figure out a way to justify it. You see the difference? Instead of reading and understanding, this is what he wants, how do I now fit into it? Instead, we go, this is what I want, how can I make it fit or make what he says fit what I want? Is that basically what you're talking about? And that's really where we get in big, big trouble. We should only be thinking about this is what he wants me to do or not do. How do I manage to do that? How can I make that happen? But instead, we're still holding on to the me, I preference thing. I don't like it. I want this. I like that or whatever. So now you want to spin and justify how you can have what you want. If your focus is only on what he wants, you don't have this problem. Because then again, this goes back to what are you willing to give up? Because usually your problem with the spinning is because it's something you don't want to give up. So you're going to spin it so you get to have what you want to have. Who's next? Okay, Deirdre.
So my question comes from Matthew 6:31, you know, talking about don't worry about what you're going to eat, how you're going to dress. So I have noticed that the world has a big issue with we've got to fix the earth, quote unquote. You know, there's less fish in the ocean, you know, trees are being cut down and, you know, all these things. So how do we, but we're also supposed to be caretakers, you know, of the earth. You know, that's something that we were supposed to do in the beginning. I very much feel that. So how do we say, yes, I'm going to do my bit and take care of the earth, but not worry about, oh, you know, like fish populations are dying and trees are, I mean, it's just, how do we not, like, nitpick, I guess?
Okay, the problem isn't nitpicking. The problem in all of you that suffer from this, the problem is recognizing what is and what is not your responsibility, okay? You only can control you. You'd like to control everything around you, but you can't. Some of you have a bigger problem with this than others, but I mean, you know, we get frustrated because we want to control things. You can't control what other people in your own house, let alone in the apartment next to you or the next country or another part of the planet is doing. But what you can do is you can be respectful to not, for example, like, you know, don't just let your water run for no reason. okay? Or to go ahead and recycle if you can recycle. I mean, the things you can do. Is it going to ultimately make a big difference? Not by yourself, but if enough people do it, it might make some difference. I'm confident, though. See, remember, we are those who believe. And as believers, whatever that means, we understand that the world will exist quite fine until he shows up. Okay? It may get dirtier and more environmentally messy and everything else, but it will still exist and somehow function until he gets here. Now, of course, if you don't believe he's coming, that's a different problem. Now you're all worried about the world ending somehow because, you know, of the environment and everything else and whatever's going on with pollution, et cetera, whatever. That may be one of the things that is causing some of the downfalls, plagues, and problems by the time he does show up. But we're all looking forward to him showing up and fixing that ultimately. Now, that doesn't take away your personal responsibility to be respectful of the creation. I mean, don't let it stress you. Don't let it frustrate you. And don't get overly upset with what everybody else is doing. But you certainly can be respectful and make sure you're not wasting as much stuff as, say, you know, the next person might be doing. Okay, but this is only that which you can control, which is you. All right? And be satisfied that that is pleasing to your Father, that, you know, it is not about being environmentally minded and everything else. He created all this stuff. Why would you not want to treat everything he created with a certain level of respect? He made the flowers and the trees, made the birds, made the fish, made everything. Why would we not treat these things with a certain level of respect? So I'm all for that. Okay? But the advocacy problem becomes an emotional problem, and then we get angry and we get bitter and we worry and we panic and we end up with all kinds of fear. You know, the fear mongering that we see happening in the politics where the world is going to end in 8 years if we don't figure out how to fix climate change. You know, it seems like nobody's paying attention to the fact that you're not going to get anybody or enough people to do anything. We can't get any, when did we ever get all the people on the planet to agree to do anything? Never. So if that's the problem, see, this is why I don't understand why we're not focusing on dealing with the absolute unstoppable results of what's happening. Because it's going to happen. We're not stopping it. Whatever is happening. Now, we could argue about what's happening or not happening. And that's a whole different argument. But I don't understand why the focus isn't on what to do with the new reality that these things are happening instead of worrying about what's causing it, because we're not stopping it. Even if we're right about what's causing it, which I don't think we are, but I mean, even if we were right, you're not going to get enough people all over the world to change their behavior in the next 8 to 12 years as they're worried about. It's just not going to happen, if ever, because people are way too selfish and uneducated, uninformed in a lot of parts of the world to even know there's a problem. And so they're not going to do enough stuff. And all you're going to do is walk around in fear. And that's not going to be good for you or anybody around you and any relationships you have. But feel satisfied in yourself that you're doing what you can, congruently to you. So if you care a lot about this stuff, do what you can do. Does that make sense? Is that fair? All right? Okay? But your obligation ends at your, you know, at your personal space. That's it. You don't have any obligation on anybody else. Okay? Now, if you're the head of a family, you could decide your family's going to do certain things. And that's for your family, but that's about it. Next.
This doubles back a little bit on the way you answered Steve's question earlier, so mm-hmm. I don't want to backtrack, but I wanted to get further clarification kind of with chapter 20, or verse 20, 22 and 23. So those together, in 23, if then the light that is within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Is it correct? I mean, is it a good way for me to remember and think of that as the way that you were talking about if we're looking at doing something that we think that we want to do and then trying to justify it? Or if it would that be more like pride of being self-pride or self-righteous or even taking it to the extent of being hypocritical? Would that also fit into that if if that's what you think you're doing, I mean, if you think what you're doing is right, but really it's twisted or distorted or hypocritical,
yeah,
then that is darkness.
Yes. Well, all of that's true. Everything you said is true. But you know, the important piece is this. It's one thing to have a person, we'll call them worldly, whatever word you want to say. They're out there with no belief system. They're just living life the way they're just living life. And they're doing whatever feels right to them and whatever that is. That is one level of darkness. Okay, and a lot of us came out of that kind of darkness. But he's talking about how great is the darkness when you should know better and you choose to bend or twist into this evil, perverted place, but still convince yourself you're in the light. Now you're in really great darkness because you don't even realize how much darkness you're in. This is why I pick so hard on the mainstream system, because the mainstream system is convincing people they're in light when they're in darkness. So that's a greater darkness than just a worldly person out there just living life to the fullest in their fleshly way. Okay, when I say fullest, meaning that they don't have any restraints and they're just doing whatever. That's a different type of darkness. That's an ignorance darkness. This is a self-driven, motivated darkness because you want what you want. So very much the pride or the hypocrisy and all the other issues that are in there. You're bending and twisting. He says, how great is that darkness? Because now this is what you think is light. This darkness is the light in you. And that's really the more scary of the two. Okay? Because remember that the other darkness is a natural state at the beginning. The other darkness is a place where something can be birthed from. The other darkness is where something can be hidden, waiting to be revealed later. The other darkness is all these other things. The one that we're talking about here in this verse is the one that's devoid of actively useful light. But it should have had actively useful light. Now, the person that's just out in the world is also in a place that's devoid of actively useful light, but they didn't even know what actively useful light was. He's talking here to people that should know better. So how great is that darkness? See, when you walk into a room where the lights are off, the darkness is obvious and you turn on a light switch. What if you walked into a room and there was light in the room and you're thinking, well, I don't need to turn on a light. But really, it's not light. It's darkness, but it looks like light. If you understand, it's a weird metaphor. But when you walk into a physically dark room, though, it's obvious that it's dark and you think, I need to turn on the light. But now, what if it's a light that doesn't shine clear and you don't get to see things like they are and it bends and twists and perverts what you see? You might see that in some of the movies or cinematically, they can do things like that. Something that will change the way things look and make you think you're seeing things clearly, but they're not. But there's light. So you're not thinking, I need to turn on any light. I'm in the light. I'm fine. You know, that's a dangerous place to be. Okay, next, Richard.
Thank you, Rabbi. It's kind of ironic, which is an interesting word. My bride Anna and I were having a discussion quite similar to your instruction for us as men this morning. And what I got out of today, it says in Matthew, you said, come to me. And that's an action. And that's that work part that no one wants to ever look at. Because one of my favorite verses is Isaiah 1:18, come to me. The part that no one wants to look at are the two or three verses ahead of that. And you went through list after list of things that we need to do. And then again in Corinthians, it says, come out, get away from. Mm-hmm. That's, again, action and work. So I was sitting here, and you just used the words again. You used them several times. Is what is it that I want? And I have an exclamation point after that. And the other part is, what is it that I want? In other words, what am I willing to do to get it? And one of the things that struck me, so I really appreciate the message today because I kind of need a public confession. I came down here, took action and work to come here. I found work around here, and I've only been here a short time. But one of the things that I've noticed I've been neglecting, and this is the confession part, and I hope I don't ever have to do this again, is time in the Word. I got so busy trying to get integrated that I came out of where I needed to be. And I'm wondering why my wife and I would have this conversation this morning, because I was not fulfilling the husband's role in the leadership part because I was not submitted or in the word either one.
Amen. Amen. Well said. See, one of the things I want to focus on that he said was, what are you willing to do? You know, what are you, in order to get what I mean, what are you willing to do? We have had so many people in the, you know, almost 20 years of doing this. We have had so many people who say, I just want to help. I'm here to help. And then you never see them. So to Richard's praise, and again, he didn't do this for to be praised, so this isn't stealing his rewards or anything, but he said that, and when he got here, he would show up at the building and say, is there something I can do? And we always had stuff to do. But we had lots of people say, I'm here to help, I'm coming here to help, and then we never see them. Okay? Now, I'm not saying those of you that have jobs and are big, he's retired, he has the time to do it. But those of you that have jobs, I know you have to go and do jobs, but there have been people that have come to us, or like they'll come to a feast and say, hey, I'm here, I want to help. And then I go to send them to the person. No, they want me to give them something. They want to help me. I said, I don't need your help. I do what I do. Go over to the head shamash and let Kurt tell you what to do, or let David tell you what to do, or somebody else who has a list of tasks that need doing, and then they disappear. You know? So what are you willing to do? Or do you already have in mind what it should look like? Well, no. If you go to somebody and ask them for something to do, you do whatever it is they give you to do. Otherwise, go there and say, do you have this to do? Because this is the only thing I'm looking to do. See, but nobody ever words it that way. It used to happen when we were at a feast site that we really did almost everything ourselves, where a person would ask that. I'd send them over to the shamash, which is the head, you know, the servant leader, and the shamash would point to a pile of garbage that has to go to the dumpster. And a person looked at them like, well, that's not what I meant. Well, no, you asked if we needed any help, but that's what I need right now, someone to take that garbage to the dumpster. Why should that matter to you? And I've heard people say, well, I don't care as long as I'm in the kingdom, even if I'm like the doorman or the garbage collector. But you don't want to do it now. So don't give me that nonsense ever. You know. But you got to show up and be available. Look, I've watched people who have been here only once or twice, and I see them with vacuums, and I see them wiping tables. There's a different hard in some people. Other people, I've never seen them do anything, and they're physically capable. There are people in this room right now that I've never seen do anything. Own it. I won't look at anybody. I'm like looking like this. I'm not looking anybody in the eye. Okay? But some of you have sat here and done almost nothing. Oneg-wise, anytime we need help for anything, we never see you. Is that how you participate as part of a body? Now, granted, there are a few of you with health issues, but you know what? I saw a lady come to the feast one time, and she had a walker, and she needed her walker, and yet she was in a food line serving. She was doing something. You couldn't stop this lady from trying to figure out some way to help. So there's things you can do if you're willing to say to whoever's in charge, whoever, what can I do? I have this handicap or that difficulty, but I want to do something. There's stuff to do. Maybe not at that moment, but just keep letting us know that you, and we'll find something. But that's the whole thing is, where, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to give up? What are you unwilling to do? What are you unwilling to give up? What kind of boundaries have you put on the whole deal here? Your Messiah gave his life and died for you. How could you be unwilling to do anything? What could there possibly be that you're not willing to do? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. All right. All right. Next question. Where's the mic? Okay, Rabbi Tom.
Thank you, Rabbi. Several people mentioned Matthew 6:23, the latter part of that verse. If then the light that is within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? What I thought of is how easily maybe we can be deceived,
mm-hmm,
or we can be misled. And so my question is, some time ago there was a game called Trivial Pursuits. I mean, I never played it. I just remember the name of it. Are there things that we can pursue or chase after that are not necessarily evil in the normal sense of the word, but a waste of time, worthless?
Absolutely.
And how can we be sure that we're not wasting our time, that we're devoting our time to something that's more pursuit worthy?
All right, so great question. And look, and this really has to do with something that most people don't ever do unless you're going into entrepreneurial endeavors or working for yourself in some manner, because then you will tend to be those who study things like setting goals, okay? You know, because the average person doesn't learn about setting goals. They just learn about getting a job or going to work, you know, for an employer and all. But they don't understand the idea of setting goals. Unless you're in athletics or some other thing, again, where there's something that there's a goal to achieve, then you set goals. Teams and coaches will teach you to set goals. But this, the point that Rabbi Tom's bringing up is that if the goal is to be transformed into a Yeshua-like person, if the goal is to be hearing the words, well done, good and trustworthy servant, if the goal is to be entering into the kingdom, then everything you do should be asking the question, does this bring me towards my goal? The answer is no, it's trivial. Now, that's not to say that you can't have any fun and do trivial things, but the point is, how much time are you putting towards trivial things? If your goal is to have a great marriage, you know, I remember hearing this, I think probably when I was single, but, you know, the statistics I'm sure haven't changed very much, about how the average husband and wife spends less than just a few hours a week even talking to each other. Okay? Well, how is that going to develop a good relationship if you really don't spend time interacting with each other? So if the goal is to have a great relation with your children, how much time do you spend with your children? Okay, if you're not putting the effort in and the time in to your goal, you're not going to achieve it. It's not going to happen just because you want it to be that way. Well, I want a good marriage, okay, but you don't spend any time putting any effort into it. Well, I want a great relationship with my kids, but you don't put any time into it. Well, I want to have a great relationship with our Creator, but you don't, as Richard was saying, he caught himself not spending enough time in the Word. You can get caught up being Martha and doing lots of physical things. I'm not just saying that for the man. I'm just saying, but being caught up in tasks as opposed to balancing the whole thing. Tasks are all wonderful. You need to do them, but you need to have a balance too. And so it's a matter of the goal. If you're an Olympic athlete, your food that you eat, the amount of sleep, who you spend time with, what time you spend, and everything that you do is all going to be measured against, is it helping me get towards my goal? Okay. So if your goal is the kingdom, if your goal is a family relationship or a marriage relationship, whatever it is, then what effort are you putting into that goal? What about the goal of becoming a man or a woman as he intended it when he made you? See, society has all kinds of opinions on what that looks like. Cultures have all kinds of opinions. That just the fact that it's 2020 almost, there's an opinion versus if it was 1920 or 1820 or whatever, right? The opinion of what a man or a woman should be. What we need to know is, what did he have in mind? And that should be a goal, to become a man or woman as he intended it. And then when it comes to relationships, be a father or mother as he intended it, husband or wife as he intended it, member of the body as he intended it. Then you can ask yourself, is what I'm doing furthering that, or is it just a peripheral thing? Or worse, is it drawing me away from that? Okay, so it could be negative, neutral, or positive. Is it positively taking me in the right direction? Is it neutral and not really doing anything but except taking up time? Or is it negatively drawing me away from my goals? And it's evident, by the way, how much time you put in to the people around you. You know, I don't remember who the famous quote is from, but somebody who was a famous performing artist, like I think it was either piano or violin or something like that, who said, if I miss a day practicing, I know it. If I miss 3 days of practicing, there are some that will know it. If I miss a week, everybody will know it. So again, if I don't continue to put the effort in, it will become obvious to others, is the point. You don't put the effort into your wife or your husband. You don't put the effort into your children. You don't put the effort into your career. You don't put the effort into your vertical relationship with Messiah and with the Father. These things will become evident, and you have to find a balance, because all of them need a certain amount of attention. There are those that will say, well, I'm doing everything right because I ignored my family and my spouse and I'm focused only on Messiah. Well, that's not what he had in mind. But he doesn't want you to also focus all your attention on your family and not focus on him. He also doesn't want you to focus on your family and him and not go to work. Oh, balancing this thing is not easy. Okay? I recommend you schedule it. That way it will get done. Manage your time by planning family time, planning vertical time, study time, work time. Block things out. Otherwise, you're just randomly running around, going nowhere, heading nowhere, and doing nothing. Next question. Steve.
I just want to add on about the focus. You try to split up your focus as a contractor. I've done that in the past, and your job suffers, and then everybody thinks you're an idiot. So the nice thing is, or I think on top of realizing that is, as a person or as trying to be a better man, I'm fortunate enough to have a couple people, I won't give names, that can come to me and say, hey, you need to step up your game. And that's hard for me to hear because you think you're doing your best, but you're spread out so many different directions, you're not even doing the potential that you have. And that's what's hard to hear. And I think that causes some people to turn and go the other way. So that's something I'm learning now. This is good, says Rabbi and Rebbitson and Stacia. I know she don't like to be on the camera, so we won't point that way. But and David. So I'm glad I have some people here that are not only willing to allow me to make a mistake, but give me opportunity to make better the next time. So it's hard to find.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Let me emphasize a point real quickly. He could, because he's somewhat mastered aspects of his craft, he could feel like he's arrived in certain areas and therefore not ready and willing to have somebody tell him, hey, you can do this even better. You can elevate this. Because that could be taken like, well, don't tell me what to do. And I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for 30 years or whatever. You know, all high-end performers that want to stay there still end up with somebody to coach them. And that coach is going to be able to say, yeah, that was great, but you can do better. Okay, so never feel like you can't have somebody to say, hey. But now bear in mind, and I fail at this sometimes, when I say to somebody that I want to make sure to tell them that it was great first. Hey, that was really good, but you can do better. Because sometimes I come in, like a lot of you can come in, and you want to criticize, and then you forget to say, well, it really was very good. It's just that you know they can do better, so you want to give them the constructive criticism, and yet, you know. But how are you ever going to keep aiming and striving for the most and the highest level you can possibly achieve if there's not anybody there to push you, to inspire you, to say, hey, I know there's still more in there that you can bring out. You're great what you're doing, but there's even more. I know there's more. But it takes a teacher of what you do, someone who knows what you do and understands what you do, to know whether or not there's more. The problem is we got a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about, trying to tell people that know what they're talking about that they're not doing it right or whatever. Make sure that you actually have the expertise before you tell somebody, hey, you know, there's more here, okay? And so that's a good point. But are you willing, no matter how long you've been doing something, to have somebody tell you there's more, there's stuff that maybe you don't know yet about your craft? And that's a humbling place. And Steve has been willing to do that, which has been good. Okay, Shira.
Really, really excellent message. And I was also very touched by the song Dayenu. You know, one of the verses that has come to me often is that piety with contentment is great gain. So I'd like to make a connection, if I may, at least for some of us, if you're anything like me. You talked about worry. And I have found that worry is like the opposite of contentment. And as I've begun to push out worry from my thoughts and just embrace a lifestyle of continual thankfulness and contentment and joy in what I do have, it's amazing what's happened, because worry paralyzes. Worry enervates. And you talked quite a bit about getting ourselves off that unmentionable part of the anatomy and getting going. And this is what I've found, that in my contentment, as that grows, suddenly I've got energy to figure out some goals. And suddenly I've got energy to go forward and energy to schedule. And it looks like the last part of my life is going to be a lot better than the rest of it.
There you go. Amen.
Hey, I'm Rachel again. Second time here.
Hey, Rachel.
Hey. I had a quick question. When that verse of being equally yoked popped out, I feel a lot of times we... The spiritual connection should always be present and first, but a lot of times, especially in partnerships or before a marriage, you know, we check that box like, hey, we believe in the same thing and we follow in Yeshua and everything. But there's, I think we should take that beyond the spiritual and apply it to the physical, you know, like our, I think sometimes it just gets real when you're sitting across the table from that person and you're married. I think that that verse could possibly apply to the physical realm, the way you both eat. You know, it was there a previous problem, like, you know, not being able to have alcohol in the home, and the other person may not be willing to give that up because they could enjoy it a lot, you know, but not have an issue with it. Do you feel that it's good to also, it would allow us in our partnerships, whether it's with a man and a woman or business or whichever, to take that from just the spiritual, because that has to be first, but also apply it across the board in the physical realm as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the unequally yoked thing is, again, has to do with teaching and instruction. Look, anything you're trying to do, if you're going to be listening to more than one teacher, if you're going to have more than one idea, or it's what we call division as opposed to vision. Okay, you have to be on the same page to be successful. Look, there's a lot of sports teams that, you know, should, by all intents and purposes, because of the athletes on the team, be winning like every game, and they don't because they're not able to have one vision. And so you get a lot of superstars on a team, and it tends to not work. You know, how many times have you seen, like, wow, this is like the ultimate lineup of people and blah, 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 and yet they don't seem to manage to win as much as they should or could, because everybody wants to be the star. Nobody wants to play as a team, and they're not working towards the same goal. And then you find teams that have, like, no players that you could even name, and yet they're winning all the time because nobody is wanting the attention. They're all striving, and, you know, they're all rowing together. You know, they're all pulling together to go into one vision. So in the physical, yes, in business, in any kind of relationship, you know, if you can be on the same page and respecting each other and that kind of thing, it's always going to work better. Okay? All right, live stream.
All right, first question. Matthew 6:23, does a good eye also mean generosity and an evil eye mean stingy?
The Jews have said that as one of the metaphors, and I didn't go there on purpose just because I didn't think that it was necessary with the rest of what was going there. So this is not talking about finances and funding and that kind of thing that you would use it for. This is really talking about the eye being the focal point and whether you're focusing on the true and straight or the bent and twisted. But yes, it has been used in other places to be a metaphor for greedy and stingy and generous and that way. But go ahead.
I guess it says, Rabbi, you commented on providing for my wife financially, and that's not a problem for me. What about emotionally and physically from what she says?
Okay, I don't know that I focus just on any kind of financial, though we have a lot of people with financial problems. Look, you need to be providing all the things that the male role is to provide to the woman. The woman needs to be providing all the things that the woman role provides to the man. The man role, generally, in its most simplest form, is to provide and protect. And that providing does include for the security issues, the emotional issues, etc. However, if you are an emotional mess and you have just a problem keeping everything in your feelings bag, etc., you're going to need other guidance and other help with that. Your husband may not be, you know, qualified to handle all that. Your job as the woman generally is the helpmeet, the encourager, the nurturer, and that part of it in terms of helping him to get to where he's going to go, where he needs to go. Of course, if you're going to be busy kicking him, knocking him, and telling him what a loser he is while you're usurping his authority, that's not going to work. But part of it has to do with ladies understanding that you are primarily responsible to figure out how to become emotionally stable. Now, on the other hand, we've got a bunch of men out there having the same problem. Okay, they're not emotionally stable. That doesn't, you know, you have both of them, you know, if both the man and the woman are in that state, we got a real problem. Okay? And that's where counseling may come in. Just because you're the husband doesn't mean that you're qualified to handle all of the emotional junk that your wife may have because of her abuses as a child or experiences and everything else that in the upbringing before you met her. By the way, ladies, same thing with you. You're not qualified to handle all the junk that he's got from all the junk he went through and abuses or whatever he went through. That's where you need outside help. And it may not be from somebody like me. You may need to go to people that are qualified and trained in that specific trauma or problem emotionally that you're going through. Okay?
All right. In 2 Corinthians 6:12, is the meaning for us today is that when we follow leadership's direction, we are free from our restraints caused by our worries and emotions.
2 Corinthians 6:12. Well, excuse me, no. Look, the section that you're reading in 2 Corinthians, it's dealing with him making an argument against whatever was being said against them. We only hear his argument here. We can assume that people are saying, well, we feel restricted and restrained because of what you've done and told us we can and can't do. And he says, look, you know, we've not restrained you. You've been restrained by your own affections. He's trying to make a point to them that they would have understood specifically based on what they had been saying and doing in relation to him. So we would only be guessing what that specifically is talking about here. Okay?
All right. Matthew 6:31-34. So here, Yeshua is saying if one walks as a submitted, trustworthy servant to him, he will provide for our needs. It's a question.
6:31-34. Yeah, I mean, this whole section there is, look, he's like, look, stop worrying about stuff. I mean, everybody in the world already is doing that, and you're supposed to be different than them. You're supposed to be set apart. And if you follow me, and if you're part of the community of Elohim, and you're a covenanted person, you should just be able to seek first the kingdom, keep your covenant the best you can. You know, in other words, the kingdom and his righteousness, the righteousness is part of the covenant. All these things will be added to you. You'll be fine. So, yeah.
It's a comment. So basically, we not only need to walk and work like Yeshua did, we also need to talk and respond to each other in words of scriptures like Yeshua did. Then we build each other up and we speak light and life. And it says, note, this way we can also find the right partner.
Okay, I think I agree with all that there, except for I'm not so sure I want people quoting scripture in each other's faces, but otherwise that made sense. Go ahead, next question.
Okay.
And by the way, hold on. If you are looking to date, marry, and all that other stuff, I would highly encourage you to get somebody to counsel you and the person that you're thinking of marrying to make sure that you're doing, both of you, what you need to do to vet each other. Okay? So that you know each other well enough to actually commit to marriage. Otherwise, I'm going to be dealing with you after you get married and you're not actually married the way you thought you should be, or to the, you know, well, if I'd have only known she were, I'd have only known he was, well, why didn't you know? So if you're thinking of getting married and you're not married, you need to spend the amount of time you need to so that you know. So you don't have to have the sentence, I never want to hear from anybody that's not already married, if I'd have only known. Spend the time getting to know. All right.
All right. Another comment. Revolving around 2 Corinthians 6:14. It says, my husband only through the grace of Yah did come to faith, but for years I had to quietly walk it out alone.
Yep.
But my husband saw Yeshua in me and made a commitment himself. Okay, so chapter 6, verse 23. Rabbi, could the body also be referred to our body as the temple of the true Elohim? 6:23.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the lamp of the body is the eye. But you know what? Let's take, you know what? I hadn't even thought of this, but I just launched on. Okay, so the lamp of the body. So the body is a group of people. We'll look at it that way. And then the eye is the leader of the group of people. And if the eye is good, then the body will be enlightened. If the eye is evil, then there's going to be great darkness. I like that. That's a powerful metaphor right there. Real good. Okay. I don't know if that's what the person was hinting at, but it seemed to be one of those things that you know, could be gleaned out of that. Go ahead.
All right. Matthew 6:25. Rabbi, when it says, is life more than food and the body more than clothing, could Yeshua be saying that the spiritual is more important than the physical? Do we need to focus more on it?
Sure. That is definitely one of the points he's making there. But he's making the point that the physical, well, if you just do the things you're supposed to do, the physical will always be taken care of. That's why all of your focus needs to be on the spiritual. That doesn't mean you don't do anything physically, but you do the best you can, you put in your effort, and Abba will open up the doors and bless you and do the things that need to happen, you know, but the spiritual has to be the primary focus.
Okay, so Matthew 6:30, since Yahweh provides for all his creation, what is the role of belief? It looks like belief is a prerequisite to receive. Does he provide even if we do not trust enough?
Well, look, I mean, look, he's saying you worry because you have a belief problem. So that's your first prime indicator that you're having a belief struggle, is that you're worried. So when you start feeling worried, just recognize, oh, I'm having a belief problem. Where is the belief problem centered? Am I having a problem because of my relationship with my husband or wife? Am I having a problem because of my relationship with Yeshua or with the Father? Where is my belief struggle because I'm worried?
All right. This question is backed on discipleship. We were talking about it earlier. It says it's two parts. So it's actually three parts. It says, please help me understand from practical and logical standpoint, it makes sense that a learner seeks the teacher. So it is the learner who needs the teacher, not the other way around. Second part is, the part I don't understand is that if Yeshua was the first one to seek his disciples and we are trying to be like him, why isn't it okay for a leader to initiate the relationship with the followers, especially if the leader believes God is asking him to lead?
Because you, me, the rest of us human fleshly guys don't know what the other people are all about, what they're capable of. He knew the ones he needed to pick that would do the jobs they needed. He was Elohim in flesh. You are not. Okay? So all we can do is allow those that are drawn to us who want to be taught and discipled. And by the way, some of them will fail out badly and some of them will flourish wonderfully. And that's going to be... But Yeshua didn't have any clunkers. Okay? In other words, he picked Judas knowing full well what Judas was going to do. Okay, he picked exactly who he wanted and exactly what he knew they were going to be like and how they would handle things. So that's something none of us are capable of. So we can't duplicate that. And nobody tried to after he did it. Okay, he was unique because of who he was. And so he did something because he didn't want to just have anybody and everybody ask him, hey, can you disciple me? He picked the 12 he wanted. Okay.
What would you say to people who are very fearful of consequences to family relationships? Should they step up and take counsel that would prove to go against the peace they want in their homes?
All right. Well, first of all, if you're very fearful, you need to do something. You can't be walking around in a very fearful state. That will not bear any good fruit. And so, you know, I have a conversation on a regular enough basis with people in the staff as well as people that are in the congregation, whether they're here or at large, where they'll tell me about somebody that's struggling with something, and they'll say how they suggested to the person to talk to me, and then I say, well, I can't make them talk to me. They have to come and talk to me, you see? But a lot of times they won't, and if I know the person, a lot of times I'll say to them, look, I know they need to talk to me. You know they need to talk to me. I'm telling you right now, they're never going to do it. Why? Because they're afraid of the council. They're afraid that they're going to have to listen or submit. They're afraid to have to humble themselves. Whatever it is, there's lots of fear. I mean, I can go on to a long list of what they could be afraid of. You have to do what's right because it's right, period. And don't worry about the consequences to the family, to the this, to the that, or whatever. But some, and I don't know if this is what the person was asking, but some people have been told, if you go and counsel with that rabbi or that person, well, then we're done. See, that's a consequence also that's fearful. Well, you know what? If you're getting threatened with that, you've got a relationship that is already done. Okay? And you need to either stand up to that or you're going to need to get counsel or something, because you don't need to be in a relationship where you're told you can't get counsel. Okay, that relationship is beyond problematic. Everybody should be free to get counsel. All right? So if you have a spouse that's telling you, if you go get counsel, we're done, you're already done. Why would you want to stay in that relationship? That relationship needs to change one way or the other. Yes or no? Okay? All right. Now, you need to make sure that the leader that you're counseling with isn't going to usurp the, you know, if the wives come to me, they need to know I'm not going to usurp the husband. Okay? I'd rather talk to both of you. Oh, but he's never going to come. Well, that's part of the problem. The person, sometimes it's the other way around. He'll say that, well, she's never going to come. People that won't counsel, like, I can't make them counsel. I've had that happen multiple times where people said, oh, but Rabbi, you need to, they got to come to me. I can't force myself on them. What kind of counsel is it going to be if I force myself? They're not going to listen anyway. You need to come to my office and we need to, yeah, that's going to go well. Never, right? Never going to go well. Next.
Okay, question is, if my husband is darkness in my life, does that mean I will not get to be with Yahweh?
No. Look, the problem is if you're unequally yoked, you just have to be much more cautious and careful about the things that you could be tempted and drawn into because the person that you're yoked to isn't on the same page you are. Okay? That's all. I mean, it's challenging. It could be complicated, but it's not difficult, really. It's, you know, it really is also going to depend on if it's the man or the woman. Okay, if it's the man who's covenanted and the wife isn't, it's going to be different than if it's the wife that's covenanted and the man isn't. And I can help you understand how to go through that minefield. But no, just because you're unequally yoked, remember, it's almost exhausting. When I say something that you know is absolutely true, that means it's always true, okay? When I say he called you where you are and you can get there from where you are, this doesn't change that. So if he called you unequally yoked, then you can get there from there. Okay, if I say something, not because I said it, but you know it's true, because I'm really talking about him. He doesn't make mistakes. He knew what he knew when he called you. He knew your situation, and he called you and not your husband, or he called you and not your wife, whatever the situation is. He knows you can get there from there, whether your spouse ever comes in or not. Now, you can still not get there based on your choices, but it's possible for you to get there from where you are. Okay? Receive the full message and stop trying to figure out if it doesn't apply everywhere when you know it applies everywhere. No matter, I'll say it more clearly, no matter what your circumstance, no matter, no exceptions, zero. Okay? When he called you, without exception, whatever your circumstance, you could get there from there. Period. Okay? That doesn't mean that it's not going to take effort, work, and counsel and things like that to help get there, because you may have a very challenging situation that needs some guidance. But you can get there, and he's provided a structure and a system to help you get there. So he didn't just know you could get there. He also knew that the people would be available and counsel and leadership. He also knew whatever you needed would be available if you avail yourself of it. If you don't avail yourself of it, then all bets are off, so to speak. Okay? Remember, I didn't say you would get there. I said you could. Make that clear. No matter your circumstance, you can, but not necessarily will, get there. That's all up to you. I know that you hate that. I know people accuse me of all this stuff online because Christianity tells you, oh no, you're saved, you're in, it's over, that's it, done deal, got your golden ticket. No, it depends on you. He gave you the opportunity. Now it's all in your hands. He'll help you whenever he feels it necessary, but it's in your hands. What are you going to do? All right, next.
All right, in 2 Corinthians 6, verses 16 through 17, we are called to come out. Isn't this the church? And this follows with laziness, not seeking, pursuing the righteousness of Torah, the walk of Yeshua?
Well, no. I mean, look, it is the church, but it's not just the church. I mean, 2 Corinthians 6 is talking about come out of her, my people, meaning all of those unequally yoked relationships. Okay? Remember, he's talking about do not be unevenly yoked, and then he talks about these partnerships, and then he gets to, therefore, he says, come out from among them and be separate. Separate. Okay? So be separate. From who? The unequally yoked relationships. Now, that doesn't mean if you're married. I'm not telling you to get a divorce. I'm talking about you can choose the instructional guidance relationships. That's the yoking part. Okay? Marriage was not about instructional and guidance. It was about I fell in love with him, he fell in love with me, or I fell in love with her, whatever, right? That's a relationship thing. But no, when you're choosing instructional submission and guidance, yoking, discipling, he says, come out from under all that. Don't be under, be separate from, don't be under these Belial, unrighteous, lawless, all this other stuff that he's talking about here. Idolatry. Come out from that. Is the church part of that? Absolutely. But don't just point to that only. You know, you got an awful lot of teachers out there that have been doing this for 5 minutes who are just as messed up and make you think you're in light worse than you were. You came out of the church and now you think you've arrived and you're still in a twisted mess. It's closer than it was before. It's more like the truth than it was before, but it's still bent and twisted. Because too many, I just found a couple of new ones that were pastors and teachers and had all kinds of stuff going on, and now they're teaching Torah, but they never put the mic down to come under an instructor. And so you hear the mixed and the mess. And that's the problem. Okay? It takes humility to say, I'm going to put the mic down. All right, next.
All right, this is the last question. I didn't even answer this, but do you have a teaching that helps people understand the roles for the man and woman in a marriage? Quite a few people asking about it.
Not yet. We're working on putting that together. Not yet. Actually, at Sukkot, we covered this quite a little bit as part of the Up to the Challenge teaching. So you can look at that. That wasn't really officially answering the question that way, but I think we covered it as part of the Up to the Challenge teachings from Sukkot. Okay, so go back to, a couple of weeks ago in October and see those teachings. All right, but we are going to put together a teaching series that'll cover that at some point, okay? Anybody else? All right, let's go ahead and get the children.